Hello there. That was Chewy Chewy by the Ohio Express, and I am Rachel Wharton, the deputy editor of Edible Brooklyn and Edible Manhattan. You can find them both online at ediblemanhattan.com. We are here on the Heritage Radio Network, heritageradionetwork.com, and today our sponsor is Fairway Market. And today we're exploring a very, very important subject, which is, what is a New York City foodie? I was just talking about this last night because a friend of mine introduced her friend, she's also a food writer, as I am, as and one of her favorite foodies. And he said that he was glad to be inducted into the hall of people who took it, who did it professionally. And I said, well, I actually think that the term foodie basically implies that you are an amateur. So I'm just going to put that out there for the guests assembled in the room, who I should probably introduce. Brian Hallwell, the publisher of Edible Brooklyn, Edible Manhattan, and the editor of Edible East End. Daniel Gritzer, who is a food writer for Time Out New York. Robert Sietsma, who is the counterculture columnist and a blogger and everything else for Village Voice. And Rachel Blackwell, who is the only non-professional foodie? In the room. Okay, foodie. Professional, non-professional, what is a foodie? Who wants to go first?
For one thing, I am not a foodie.
Okay, Robert, why are you not a foodie?
Is that a professional distinction?
It's a word that I might have used 10 years ago, but now it just seems frivolous and stupid.
Why?
Because, I mean, I do it for a job. I mean, I don't, it's only my job. I don't define myself by only being interested in food and nothing else.
Yeah, note that his That's mouth Rachel. Is full.
Yes, I think it's, I'm always eating.
I think it's fair to say also that Robert has been doing what he's been doing for quite a while before the term foodie ever appeared on anybody's radar.
That's true.
So he definitely has a right to
okay, wait.
To refuse
but
the
group,
label.
Group vote. Professional or amateur? Foodie.
Amateur.
Really? I think
that was
it's
Brian.
To me, it's something that people sort of apply to themselves. It's a self-applied label, and so whether you're an amateur or a professional, some people choose to think of themselves that way, and some choose to not. For one reason or another,
as even people who actually are foodies.
Well,
right,
I think
yeah, exactly. You may be what that word foodie represents, and you may not want anything to do with it because it's sort of an icky word.
I think that if you're a professional, you don't want to be called a foodie because you want to be called a professional food writer
or chef or a
sommelier or et cetera, et cetera. But if you when you're at home and you're really jazzed on some. On some jam that you're cooking up or whatever you're doing in your own kitchen.
Tweet this.
Yeah, no, when it applies to your own kitchen, you probably all start, doing backflips for the word foodie. But I think that when it applies to your job, it's an insult. Well, I would just assume because, hey, I'm just a foodie.
Well, what are the warning signs of a foodie?
I think you know more about the food scene maybe than some professionals.
like you must know what is the last restaurant Jean George opened up. You refer to chefs by their first names.
Right.
Wait, is foodie about restaurants or is it about food?
I was going to ask that question. That's a very good point.
There are different brands of foodies. That was a Freudian slip.
The biggest brand is probably, the Food Network demographic. I think that's probably the reason why I wouldn't call myself a foodie, although maybe I fall into that category, is it's become a sort of throwaway term for someone who watches food television, subscribes to a food magazine or two, and says when the topic of food comes up in conversation, they say, oh, I'm a foodie, as opposed to someone, I suppose I don't want to associate with it because it's obviously about more than food. It's about how food connects you to community and to history and to your neighborhood and
which
to your loved ones.
Edible Brooklyn
well, see,
and
now
edible
you're
Manhattan?
Just talking about being like a food scholar. I would admit to being a food scholar, but not a foodie, because what you're saying about the Food Network is exactly right. The Food Network is bullshit from one end to the other. They have taken what was a fairly agreeable...
Even Alton Brown?
I was just going to say the same.
Especially Alton Brown. To begin with, the quintessential fact of Top Chef, as the other Rachel and I were recently discussing, is that you can't taste anything. There can be no food without taste. So the idea that they are mounting these pretentious dinners and like giving weird haircuts and insisting on tattoos up and down the arm, and that for them is foodieism. The fact of the matter is that that has nothing to do with food. If there is no food, if there is no taste.
Now, what about, I mean, food television predates Top Chef. So what about the origins of food television when you had Julia Child and
well, that's
Jacques
totally
Pepin.
Righteous. I mean, I love that. I love the idea that there can be people in the kitchen who are just in a straightforward way teaching you how to make things, imparting skills. But there's nothing about imparting skills or knowledge or intelligence about Top Chef, period.
So it's almost
like... I hope
like
I'm stepping on somebody's toes here.
It's an educational... It's an almost an educational question of, can you learn something from this food programming that you
right.
have?
Right,
as you obviously
Chaucer
can't
said
taste.
Of the scholar, gladly would he learn and gladly teach. And that's totally true of the early food shows, you know, where they actually were imparting something to you instead of like trying to make you buy into like Glad bags and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. But is that because they found that there weren't enough people who cared about that stuff? I mean, they're obviously doing it for a reason, right?
Palpably,
no money
Julia Child had a giant following on TV.
Did she, what, in the early years?
Of course.
Or does she now?
Well, she invented it. But, I mean, there have been great chefs from, you know, from that guy, the pervert who was the galloping gourmet, not galloping gourmet.
The frugal, frugal gourmet.
Frugal, the frugal,
was
yes.
Is he a pervert?
He's a little weird. Jeff Smith.
Well, we don't know because he was never actually convicted of what he was
alleged pervert.
So,
but
yes.
Like in a grassroots sense, Julia Child is more like Robin Bird than like Emeril.
Yes.
Well, Emeril can't cook his way out of a paper bag and never could. He's not from New Orleans. He's from Boston. He's a Boston cook.
Bam.
So maybe, I mean, you know, we don't want to make this about semantics, but I like the, I'm a food interested person. That's another way to think about it. Or maybe a food activist. Mm. I mean, it's about more than food just for the pleasure. I mean, obviously there's pleasure involved in what we're doing here. Where we just got a couple of pizzas and some roast chicken from Roberta's.
He's lying. We're saltine crackers.
But it's about food as a way to influence the world around you, and maybe that's what differentiates a Julia Child from a very commercialized show on the Food Network.
Mm-hmm. This is an interesting thing about the word foodie, because...
No gravitas.
It's
no gravy.
Yes, no gravy.
Almost, in some sense, almost the act of avoiding the word speaks volumes about how you're trying to position yourself in this sort of sea of people who have all become very interested in food.
I know, it's fascinating. It's fascinating how this term polarizes people.
Well, it used to be a neutral term, and now it has gradually become, at least among the food journalists that I know, a kind of a negative term. Mm-hmm. It used to be positive, and I used to say, hey, I'm a foodie or whatever, but now it's come to be a kind of like frivolous interest in the kind of public relations level of food and in new products and in new chefs, where you don't really care what the chef is making. I mean, Chang is God, whether he makes a bird shit ice cream or not, you know?
Yeah, I'm into that.
Into the bird shit ice cream?
Sorry.
What's up? Man, I just can't get over how
sorry
the word itself. It's like, so what I mean, like, it's like we come up with all these like triple adjectival things to define ourselves other than foodie.
There's food. There's foodism. Mm-hmm. There's foodistic. There's foodie.
There's gourmand.
Gourmand.
Oh, wait.
That, well, that was a load. That's always been a loaded term.
Wait, now, what is the difference between a gourmand of the, you know, talking about in the 70s and 80s in New York, and a foodie in New York?
Wait,
now.
I know.
What's the difference?
I was actually talking with my dad about this recently. One of them has a very negative connotation in the original...
You're talking about gourmand.
Gourmand, which is like you eat so much you get gigantic.
Well,
and
gourmet was always a positive term, but gourmand always had a quibble about it. There was always... It made you kind of think like you were kind of in it for the kind of like the hipster value rather than actually...
Kind of
truly
like
interested in food. In other words, you were kind of like a fly-by-night gourmet.
Like, kind of like a foodie.
Yes.
No! If there are any foodies, we did not harm any foodies in the taping of the show.
I intend to grill one a foodie on that fire right outside the window if I can.
Actually, it's been proven that foodies taste delicious.
Cannibalism, the uncharted territory.
Brooklyn and
territory.
Manhattan foodies. Gosh. Wait, so what would we call ourselves?
This is the problem. This is the problem, right? Because on one level, it's sort of it very conveniently conveys an interest in food on some level, and then it's become so diluted, or so many other people like apply this term to themselves that you almost don't want to associate with them, that you then try to avoid it, and then it's like, what's left?
Well, I think that you guys are all professionals. You guys are writers. You have experience in restaurants. There's food activists. And what about, you know, a lay person, a person who's, let's say,
like,
you know,
Rachel.
Like me. Let's say, I mean, I work in TV production, let's say, and I enjoy a dinner party or two, and I, you know, actively pursue cooking food and shopping in a certain way and doing whatever, and it's an interest, it's a hobby. Is foodie a negative term for that type of person?
Not at all. A food hobby.
Hold on.
That's much more easier to get wrap your teeth around.
Food,
the idea of being a food hobbyist is a fine pursuit, but foodie kind of like,
and without it, them,
it's
most
religious.
Four of the five of us it in this a, room would not have
it
occupation.
Has a religious aura. Foodie right. Has a religious aura. It's like being a kind of like a priest.
I feel
it
like
does.
Foodie has a kind of cutesy thing. Yeah.
Like
it's
groupie.
A little too cutesy.
Exactly. I think anyone who, it's like the amateurs all, like, I'm a foodie, and they're proud, and they love to be called foodies. This guy that I met last night was so thrilled to be introduced as a foodie. And yet, everyone I know, that's the paradox. That's why it's so fascinating.
So maybe foodist would be better.
Foodist sounds much more, you know, like, serious.
Stick up the ass.
It definitely, yes, it sounds a little stick up the ass. Like, maybe I would be like, you know, should I do a 2 3/8 of a cup? Should I do 2.5 cups?
I think that's the problem is in avoiding the term, the alternative sounds so contrived that you just basically sound like an asshole in the end anyway.
Which apparently
good.
We all
way to
are.
Slip in. But is the bigger discussion that every food, every word, every label in the food world, it's very easy to misuse them and abuse them. I mean, we've abandoned local, we've abandoned organic.
We have?
Not me. I love locavoric. That's still my favorite word.
Ooh, labels. We're headed into a break zone, but I do think we should talk about labels overall when we come back. But until then, we've abandoned. You think we've abandoned locavore?
To some extent, but we'll talk about it after break.
All right, that was Juicy Fruit, and I am Rachel Wharton, the Robert's talking, the deputy editor of Edible Manhattan and Edible Brooklyn, which you can find both of them online at ediblemanhattan.com. We are on heritageradionetwork.com. Our sponsor today is Fairway Market, and we are talking about the very important subject of what is a foodie. Let's see, where should we go from here? This is part two. We're going to talk about labels. I'm still fascinated by the fact that I feel like everyone in the room is kind of saying that foodie is like people who cook. They're hobbyists. They go to farmers markets, but maybe they don't know.
The foodies are the people that go to Whole Foods and buy all sorts of quote organic unquote food and then let it rot in the refrigerator while they watch Top Chef.
Which is a perfect segue into other labels. I want to ask Rachel, who is the one non food writer in the room,
but the most expert person in the room.
So I'm really, I would totally. Yes. Yeah, actually, if you'd listened to part one, you would realize that she totally kicks all of our asses. If someone asked me this question, I would really hate them, but I'm going to ask you this question.
Uh-oh.
When I say organic,
yes,
what do you think?
I know what it's supposed to mean.
Okay, what's it supposed to mean?
No pesticides.
No pesticides. And, well, I guess that's actually pretty much kind of what it means at this point. This is totally where Brian needs to weigh in.
Where is the food activist? I mean, and why is that not trusted? I mean, I definitely think that now I am skeptical of the USDA organic symbol. Even though I know what it's supposed to mean, I don't actually trust that it means what it's supposed to mean.
I mean, the nutshell description is that when organic scaled up, when the USDA took control from all these little state certifiers all over the country, the label did get watered down a little bit. It's still the only eco label out there that tells you that the food was not raised with pesticides, the animals weren't pumped full of, you know, fed hormones and antibiotics, etc., and all the things we generally associate with organic. But the reason that a lot of people have lost faith in the term is because plenty of organic farmers around the country chose not to get certified after that change happened. They just wanted to build relationships with their customers. So if you know your farmer, you can trust that the farmer tells you he or she's organic, as opposed to seeing the certified organic on the label. So that was kind of the first brick, or, you know, first hole in the dam, or whatever metaphor you'd use.
Right. Well, it's when we started to realize that there were many issues bundled together here, that we were using organic as code for things grown by farmers that we could trust, who were not like putting like weird shit on the fields, you know. But then the term was completely co-opted, so that some behemoth corporation like Whole Foods, which wears the cap of virtuosity, can be like denuding land in Chile to grow organic, you know, on the face of it, organic stuff, so that people, wealthy people, can sit in the cities of North America and eat raspberries all year long.
But that are, well, that's,
you know,
so
like,
I, that's
$6
why this is also nuanced.
Yeah, I mean, that's the paradox, is that yes, Walmart being the biggest seller of organic foods in the United States, even bigger than Whole Foods market, is that a bad thing? I guess it's good if it means more organic acreage around the world, but clearly it's not exactly what the spirit of the organic food movement was at the beginning.
Not only is it not the spirit, but it often conflicts with the letter. I mean, there's much chicanery going on, like they just discovered that big soy milk producer actually is not using organic soybeans, even though that the milk is labeled organic soy milk. In other words, once this thing got so big, then you really couldn't trust it anymore. And once, of course, the root problem is capitalism itself, that, you know, the idea that you must make giant profits at whatever cost has led people to like whittle down what organic means. And so, as you point out, many of the farmers who were once organic and sought organic certification realized that they couldn't compete with the big boys anymore when it comes to like making their honest products.
Well, this is one thing I really like about everyone on the planet declaring themselves a foodie, is that if most of those people are going to farmers markets and they didn't used to do it so much anymore,
or buying CSAs.
Yeah, and so it's like, that's why it's like, you can call yourself a foodie, you can watch Rachel Ray, you can watch whatever the hell you want. If you're actually starting to get know a little bit more,
he's definitely a foodie, that guy.
Yeah.
But
guys,
where you're
getting
chopping
kind of
wood,
like Abraham Lincoln
just paces
okay,
from us.
Not to get off topic, but I always thought soy milk was kind of like candy.
Oh, you mean in flavor, or
it's just so processed? It's such a processed
totally,
product.
Well,
it's yes. not.
Soy is,
it's,
an, soy is an interesting example.
Yeah, it's
of the,
not. What's so farm fresh about soy milk?
Not to mention that it's part of that, you know, that agricultural monoculture where they've taken corn and soybeans and like replaced all of the diverse crops, which could, as you know, lead us to disaster.
Well, that's where the nuance is. It's like there's so many. Well, let's, like people, a lot of people buy soy milk because they think that they're making the right choice in every single aspect, and it's
right.
Candy. That's what's distressing to me.
And so then organic became replaced with locavore as the term of, you know, of being like virtuous. And then along came some people and told you that your carbon footprint may be even greater buying locally than buying things that are produced thousands of miles away.
Well, let's
that makes my head explode.
Let's be honest about this on some level, because we are also, I think, at least the four of us who work in professionally in the food realm, we're complicit in this process, right? Because this is really, this speaks a lot to trend cycles and things like that, and being on the forefront of something. And while on one level we're totally dependent on people who label themselves as foodies because they very well may make up a good portion of our readership and read our words. So what happens, you push a certain idea or ideal and then people start to buy into it, and then in order to be the go-to source about these things, you need to step yourself outside of that to bring it to the next level. And of course, on one level, that's a little bit disingenuous because you're basically, you know, in the same way that fashion companies just create the new trend for the season so that they can drive their product, right? Which is partly what we all do because we're all selling issues on some level. The flip side is we're also helping to push the envelope, right? Because okay, at a certain point, this organic thing wasn't even big at all. And so if you can get to the point where even these large companies are buying into this idea and selling it, and then we say, well, we're dissatisfied with the way they're doing it, let's push it a little more, we can keep sort of bringing things along. And in some way, I guess that we're...
This is also grunge. What's that? It's also grunge.
Yeah, we're totally responsible. We're totally responsible, and we also buy into it, right? I mean, we're part of the process.
I do think it actually, we are at an amazing point where we can be really upset with major with massive, gigantic corporations for the way they use terms like organic and locavore. I mean, it's both good and bad at the same time.
And the way food writers use the term foodie.
Yes. Thank you, Rachel.
It's a short word that's easy to stick in a headline, mm-hmm. if you don't have a lot of space. But maybe the bigger, you know... The bigger issue is that what someone implies, hopefully, when they say they're a foodie, or any of us in the room, is that they're a little bit more aware and they ask these sorts of questions. I mean, another term that people don't use to describe themselves is perhaps food literacy. You know, if as a population we're more food literate, then we're asking questions not only about the carbon footprint of our food.
That means you read the ingredients.
I mean, that would be the first step, but it means that you question, if you see soy milk, you say, my God, there must have been a lot of processing that went into this. And or if you pick up a bottle of Tropicana apple juice and you see that it says may contain apples from, and then there's a list of 25 countries. So then you begin to think through the entire food chain. I mean, that's what I think of as a sophisticated, aware, conscientious eater, which is, you know, is another. I mean, Michael Pollan uses the term eater when he talks about people to try to make them a bit more of an activist.
Do you know why he uses that word?
He's tired of foodie too.
Probably.
Is that why?
And good writing involves using actors and the eater, right, as opposed to generically talking about people. You know, we're eaters as opposed to farmers. We're on the other end of the food chain, and we have an important role to play in the food chain as well.
And yet, in spite of all of this consciousness raising, we have not succeeded in feeding our children good food, and they're turning into idiots as a result.
You think? Because I ate a bunch of crappy food, and I actually have thought about this a lot.
I did too, but it's even worse now. At least when I went to school, there were like kind of big-armed ladies serving up big scoops of potatoes. No. Now it's just like frozen pizzas.
That's what I grew up eating in school.
Well, that's why you're so hyperactive.
I'm really smart, Robert. I actually have thought about this so often.
Yes,
it's
me
like
too.
With all the stuff about trying to change school food. I was like, well, I ate ices and pudding pops and frozen pizza,
and you're still alive,
which is terrible. I was like,
was your hair red before you did all that?
But I had many, many years of being fed only by my parents before I hit high school.
Well, like cracklins and boudin.
Because I did grow up in North Carolina, we had pulled pork sandwiches at least once a week in my high school cafeteria.
Coleslaw on top of them?
Yes! There is no other way. Oh, wait.
Put up your dukes. I like Texas barbecue.
I like both. Wait, we were on... Because there's this dichotomy in the foodie world of... like, you know what David Chang is up to, and you follow the feed, but you may not know anything about where the ingredients come from or why you'd want to, you know, eat foie gras or not eat foie gras, or why you'd want a Brussels sprout from the farmer's market or not. And I mean, foodie is non-discriminatory. You can be a foodie and shop only at the farmer's market and cook every meal, right? You can also be a foodie and only eat out.
At restaurants.
Yeah, very true.
Which is one reason there.
And by this time, you could be a foodie and just eat out at McDonald's every
That's true. If you blog about it.
Foodie has been so diluted. Yeah.
You're basically just a self-professed person who's interested in food,
obsessed with
right?
food, that's, yes.
Yeah, you could so probably be definition. Like a hostess foodie.
Yeah, foodie just means obsessed with food now, and maybe it used to mean something more meaningful, and maybe it didn't.
Has there always been in the United States? I mean, this is new, right? This is what the United States of arugula basically traces. That now we're obsessed with food. Okay, why? No, why foodie? Why now?
It's completely new. And to talk about a previous show that all of us were on, I asked my dad what he ate as a Jew growing up in Brooklyn in the late 1940s, and he said they never ate out. People just didn't eat out. Yes, they were into Chinese food when they could go to a Chinese restaurant, but they didn't eat out. So that's definitely a new thing. And why people are foodies? I think food is the it's like a type of gateway drug into other issues.
Absolutely true. When I was growing up in Minnesota, I ate before the age of 16. I ate out in a restaurant 3 times in my life, period, because my parents' attitude was, if you have a kitchen and you have food, why in God's name would you go to a restaurant?
Yeah, children and restaurants did not go together. Restaurants were maybe for dates or for like marriage proposals. It was definitely special and fancy, and otherwise we ate. My mother cooked our food, and her father cooked their food, and we created food for each other.
That's the way it was for me as well, which is partially why I always wanted to eat out. Like, to me, it was like the most exciting, most awesome, amazing thing ever.
Well, that's still, for me, it's the same thing. I mean, I love to eat out because I never did when I was a kid. You know, it's like still special to go into a restaurant and like eat a meal. I like feel like I'm a movie star or something, you know?
Oh, we have so little time. And there's so much to cover. I mean, for example, I still think we should try and forge another term. But we need several terms, right? You need to determine between types of foodie.
I think foodist sounded so classy. I love foodist.
It's religious. It's like you're part of a cult.
Yeah, I'm a Buddhist foodist.
And foodist sounds a lot like foodie.
Yeah, I'm a nudist Buddhist foodist.
With a tootist.
Foodie sounds so...
Rachel, put your shirt back on.
Well, there's this nice raging fire.
But there's this fire, yeah.
But maybe something to talk about in a future show that all of this relates to is, you know, what is the significance of the fact that Gourmet went under, Frank Bruni retired? I mean, your food writing is very different than what food writing would have been 10 years ago. That shows a type of evolution, and let there be foodies. Let there be foodies in the world.
I think
for the writing,
this,
not necessarily for the better, though.
This all points to comfort food.
It does. I was going to say, no more white tablecloths.
Yeah.
It kind of does. Foodies allowed.
It'll all cycle back, though. Eventually, we'll all be wearing ties and eating at white tablecloths and be totally miserable.
I think it's a process. We're all engaged in a process, and I think that we have certain ideals and things that we're sort of trying to move towards. And you know, as the general public, whatever that is, sort of catches up with the idea, we have to keep trying to, you know, everyone's trying to push it to that next level, and I guess that's more the positive spin to put on it as opposed to the trendy spin that you could also more negatively put on all of this. But that's kind of what we're all involved in. And I guess if there's something noble in the pursuit, that's a good thing.
There's nobility in eating well, right?
They go together.
Yes. What would I call myself? Rachel? Probably. I think we're about to wrap up, so I should basically say, I'm Rachel Wharton, the deputy editor of Edible Brooklyn and Edible Manhattan. You can find us both at ediblemanhattan.com. You can find all of this, should you want to listen to it over and over again, which I'm sure you will, at heritageradionetwork.com. More bubblegum pop. Woo!
Chew it, baby. Always got a mouthful of such sweet things to say. Chew it, baby. Chew is full of sugar, and I love her that way. Ah, ooh, I love to kiss her, love to hold her, love to miss her, love to scold her, love to love her like I do. Ooh, little Chewy, don't know what you're doing to me, but you're doing to me what I want you to. Thank you.
love me, it's a real sugar.